I'm going to call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that the time is currently 1:55 p.m. on Monday, February 23rd, 2026. Looks like we have everyone here, Representative Allard, Representative Stapp, Representative Moore, Representative Bynum, Co-Chair Schrage, Co-Chair Josephson, Representative Jimmy, Representative Galvin, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Hannon, and myself, Co-Chair Foster. And just a reminder, if folks could please mute their cell phones. We've got two items on the agenda today. We've got House Bill 34, that's the Alaska Innovation Council by Representative Holland. Then we also have House Bill 280, that is the highly digitized tax bill. We heard House Bill 34 last session. Again, that's the Alaska Innovation Council. And so we'll take a brief recap of the bill first from Representative Holland as well as his staff, and then we'll review the updated fiscal note. And at that point, we'll set a new amendment deadline, and then we'll place the bill aside. And then we will review the fiscal notes and with regard to the next bill, which is House Bill 280, we'll review the fiscal notes and we'll take some questions. We'll do that. So with that, I'd like to invite Representative Holland as well as his staff, Timothy Truer, to please come to the table and put yourselves on the record. And again, we did hear this bill last year, but we wanted to do a recap just to refresh everyone's memories, and then we'll go to the fiscal note. So with that, Representative Holland, thanks for being here.
Great. Thank you to the chair and to the committee. For the record, Representative Kai Holland, House District 9. Through the chair, I was asked to briefly recap my bill, House Bill 34, establishing the Alaska Innovation Council, for the committee as a refresher after a long interim. In a sentence, this bill creates a council of leading experts in innovation and economic development from across all relevant Alaska sectors in order to provide an annual plan that assesses and advises the governor, the legislature, researchers, and with the private sector on how to grow and diversify our state's economy by leaning into Alaska's unique strategic advantages and innovation opportunities in key growth areas. That's critical for our state's future as we face a stagnant real GDP growth and a loss of 34,000 working-age Alaskans. This is the first step to answering those challenges because, according to a study by UAA Center for Economic Development, 89% of net new job creation in Alaska over 10 years has come from firms that were less than 5 years old. The future economic vibrancy of Alaska depends upon linking and leveraging our assets and investments in growth areas through innovation. I'll close by noting that this bill was modeled on Oregon's Innovation Council. That's where we've seen that for every dollar invested in that economic development coordination effort, it generates $30 in economic activity. Mm-hmm. To discuss the specifics of the bill, I'm now going to turn the mic over to my Chief of Staff, Tim Truer.
Mr. Truer?
For the record, Tim Truer, staff to Representative Holland. Allow me to briefly walk you through this bill. Slide one summarizes it. So Section 1 of the bill adds the Alaska Innovation Council to the list of state boards and commissions. Section 2 is the meat of it. It defines the membership of the council as an entity embedded within DCCED. I won't go through all the details on the slide. Suffice to point out that the 12 members of the council draw from all corners of the private sector, but it also includes representatives of state government, academia, labor, and economic development orgs. Section 2 also defines the duties and powers of the council, namely providing expert advice on where and how to lean into emerging industries and growth sectors in our economy, or otherwise, supporting innovation and entrepreneurship. This section instructs how the council will operate. Finally, Section 2 details the primary product of this council, an annual innovation and economic competitiveness plan. Covers topics in the box on the lower right of the slide. Sections 3 and 4 of the bill are uncodified law, detailing how the council will spin up in its first year. And as a reminder, this bill has changed since its original introduction to the House. With feedback from other representatives and government officials, this council was shrunk from 19 members to 12, including removing representatives of the Alaska legislature. We also move the meetings online and remove stipends for council members for cost and convenience. And I'll close by acknowledging that, yes, we are in tight fiscal times, but we view this bill as planting seeds in a time of famine. Thank you for your time, and if it pleases the chair, we welcome any questions from the committee.
Great, thank you. Maybe I think what we'll do first is go to the fiscal notes. That way we've got all the information on the table, and then we'll go to questions. So thank you for that. And if I could have, I believe, Ms. Hannah Lager come to the table and put yourself on the record. And if you could walk us through, see, the one fiscal note that you have, and then we've got another one. So thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Thank you. For the record, my name is Hannah Lager. I'm the Administrative Services Director for the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. We put forward one fiscal note, control code FEMIU, for this bill in the Commissioner's office. There's just one change to this fiscal note from last year, and that is to increase the personal services line by $1,000 to reflect the current contractual rates for the position. This fiscal note includes $166,500 in the personal services line, $175,000 in the services line, and $10,000 in the commodities line.
Okay, thank you. Let's see here. I think what we'll do before we go to questions is maybe we'll just go over the other fiscal note very quickly. If I could have Mr. Anderson come up, and this is the ADA fiscal note. And Mr. Anderson, if you could put yourself on the record.
Thank you. For the record, Brody Anderson, staff to Representative Neil Foster. Today I'll be walking the committee members through the ADA bill, or the ADA fiscal note, referenced as code control RNJYU. That fiscal note has been killed or removed since the original bill had a member of ADA on that committee or on the council. Since they were removed from the membership, ADA feels no longer that they no longer have the necessary requirement of a fiscal note. So that fiscal note will be removed as soon as the Office of Budget and Management has been notified and they responding accordingly.
Okay, thank you so very much. So maybe what we'll do is we'll go to questions, whether it's on the bill or the fiscal notes. With that, do we have any questions? Representative Allard.
Thank you, Co-Chair. So I'm just kind of curious, this is going to cost a lot of money, and are we saying that as we continue to do this, we're going to go ahead and just fund this every single year? I mean, we're in dire straits. We just heard the floor speeches of just falling off a fiscal cliff. There's a lot of things going on. So I'm just trying to get my thoughts together here, and then I might have just one quick follow-up. I'm real hesitant. I don't care who the person is or what party they belong to or what opposition or what team. Anything with the fiscal note is screaming, no. So.
And Mr. Truer, if you'd like to also come up, you're welcome. And maybe we'll give the first bite at the apple here to Representative Holland.
Great. Thank you, through the chair, to Representative Allard. You know, as this council is set up, it is intended to be a continuing council from year to year. This is an effort that I've seen used in other states and provinces that provides a vital coordination to the money that's being spent through economic development, through university programs, through community programs to link and align those different efforts. It does have a fiscal note associated with the coordination that would be offered to allow this council to function, but it is also seen as a necessary part of doing the work of planning and developing the opportunities that we need in the future. So it's a question of, you know, what does our state look like if we don't do this, if we continue to let our economy stagnate, if we continue to let disparate efforts work in silos. We will likely have more of what we have seen for the last 15 years, which has been an exodus of our working age adults. And I'm absolutely committed to bringing together people that I know when we bring them into the same room, they do great work. And this will accomplish that. And there is a cost to being able to facilitate that.
Follow up, Representative.
Yeah, just I like the thought process of it. I think it's good. My concern is, why wouldn't we just run it through Department of Commerce, let them establish a council, let them establish a team that does it? We're creating more government positions, one of them that's even at $166,000, and I'm super concerned of what, you know, we have hundreds of vacant positions, and I just don't see this as, I guess, do we have proof it's going to generate money? And if so, it should just be a department issue.
Representative Holland.
Great. Thank you. Through the chair, you know, when I put this together to begin with, it was my intent and my hope that this was going to bring together the efforts currently going on with the Department of Commerce and Community Economic Development, potentially ADA, potentially the university, that could be doing this work, and that it would have essentially had a zero fiscal note. In my opinion, it should have a zero fiscal note. This should be the work of these existing departments and programs. But the fact is, the way our structure works, this was seen as new work, and it's interesting to note that the DCCED budget used to have a significant multi-million dollar funding line for economic development. That line has been $0 for the last 2 years. $0 in our state budget for economic development. And if that doesn't concern anybody, I don't think you realize what is happening to our economy. $0 in economic development right now. Let that sink in. So this is a fiscal note. It's a few hundred thousand dollars to do some coordination. I do hope, though, that it is the catalyst for the department and for other agencies and our corporations to start recognizing that this is the work that needs to be done for our path forward, and that the work being done in those different agencies and departments and the personnel that are there would be realigned around doing this work, so it wouldn't have to look like something separate requiring a separate appropriation. But it is where we're at today. It is the direction I believe our state needs to go in to do this work, and if that means that it's initially going to take somebody to be the catalyst to get it started, then so be it.
Okay. Representative
Just a little bit of clarification, if Representative Holland would allow. So did we run this through Commerce to see if they could facilitate this? And if you did, what was their response? I see a fiscal note. Maybe that was their response. Mm-hmm. But if you could.
Representative Poland.
Yeah, through the chair, we did meet with the department at least once, maybe twice, to discuss the bill and the other bill that's related to this that we're not discussing today on entrepreneurship. And this, I think, you know, was the outcome of that did result in reducing the fiscal note and efforts to try and streamline the costs of that. So we've pared it down. But, you know, I would, ask perhaps if the director, you know, Sean Lager, wants to add anything more to our meetings and our discussions to speak for the department on those discussions.
Director Lager?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. Through the chair. We did have those conversations, as the representative mentioned. This is not work that the department has staff to do currently. As the representative mentioned, we no longer have staff to support that function in the agency and would require additional resources.
One more last follow-up or comment, if I may.
Representative Ballard.
So we have, I don't know how many hundreds, maybe even thousands of vacant positions, and sort of like I had suggested to do, and I had the conversation with the executive branch with forming a new Department of Agriculture that we do lateral transfers and move folks over. And we should be doing the same thing. We shouldn't be carrying fiscal notes this large, and we shouldn't be hiring or starting new positions when we have so many vacant positions already. So to reallocate, move funds around, I could totally get on board with this. I think it's great. But to have a fiscal note to fund this every year is just not something I can get on board with. But I appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you, Rep. Holland, for bringing it forward. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. And in line, I have Representative Bynum, Galvin, Moore, Jimmy, and Stapp. Did I miss anyone? Representative Bynum.
Yes. Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Appreciate that. opportunity to ask a few questions. So I was going to ask some questions very similar, Representative Holland, on the lines of, you know, where our governor should be directing his, directing his departments. And so looking into the future, a future governor and the ambition of saying, yes, I think that this is a very important thing. If this wasn't to move forward, do you still feel like that there could be enough advocacy that the governor, through support from the legislature, to say we need to fund commerce, community, economic development, along with Department of Labor and Workforce Development to try to achieve some of the goals that this council would do ultimately? Do you see that that would be an opportunity for a future governor to be able to prioritize this?
Representative Holland.
Right. Thank you. Through the chair to Representative Bynum. Absolutely. I would like to believe that that the staff we have in the different agencies, departments, would be doing this work.
Quick follow-up.
Follow-up.
So when I was looking through the bill, there's a duties and powers. You know, it's half the page on page 3 of the bill. Lines 11 through 29, it kind of talks about what the vision for this council would be. From your perspective, how effective do you think that this council would be if it's only meeting on a semi-routine basis, meaning that there's a lot of information to be pulled together when we start talking about trying to bring innovation into our economy? I think there's sectors of the economy that are already doing that. But to try to align all these 12 people to say we're actually going to have a work product that actually achieves the goal. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Representative Holland.
Great. Thank you. Through the chair. I think it's a good observation that this is not something that goes 0 to 1 the first couple times they meet. I would offer that 3 times a year that we've noted here really kind of fits in my experience with the cycle of what happens in Alaska and economic development, and particularly with the university's involvement, the fall planning, the winter execution, the spring activities. This fits into the natural flow, so I think this is effective. Will it change the world the first couple times they meet? I think there will be very important coordination activities that will be valuable from the very beginning. Activities like what is happening right now with geologic hydrogen or critical minerals and the innovation activities there that I think we will see low-hanging fruit. But you're right, there will be longer strategic efforts that will take more time than just 1 or 2 meetings to accomplish.
Thank you. And, Mr. Chair, one more follow-up.
Sure. Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. So we obviously look at where we're at in the fiscal climate within the state. The state has not provided any kind of meaningful capital investment, in my opinion, for many years here. And I don't foresee that there's going to be an opportunity to have meaningful capital investment as we move forward. Would you think that the intent of this council would be to want to try to leverage private dollars to create these innovative opportunities, or would it be aligned to give recommendations for basically capital expenditures from the state?
Representative Holland.
Through the chair, I would expect that a significant portion of this will do two things. One is it will focus the investments we're already making, particularly through the university and education system. There's significant dollars that are going into research and programs like the Akwasi drone program or the Alaska Center for Energy Power. So to the degree that this will help us focus, align, and get more benefit from that, that will happen. To the degree that this aligns private efforts and money, I certainly believe that that will also be an outcome of this. So to me, it's a little bit of public dollars we're already spending, private dollars that are available, and linking and leveraging those more effectively.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, through the chair. I have a couple of questions. One of them is related to the department itself. I know that I saw that, for example, in our org chart that you presented with DCCED, you removed ATIA from that org chart. I asked about that offline, so it hasn't been on public yet on the record. And what I found out was that the department was really looking at life, health, safety topics and making sure that we kept the most highest priority possible present. Is that accurate?
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, yes, as far as our operating grants, those are prioritized life, health, safety, and any items that were one-time items not related to that in prior years were removed.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I wanted us to hear that because it is sometimes hard to think about our priorities. And when I know, as we all have heard, how advantageous it is to put dollars out in the universe saying, don't forget about Alaska. And how much that has helped. We learned all about the multiplier effect, that is how many dollars end up coming into our universe, not only vis-a-vis those who are spending independent traveler dollars, but other dollars that certainly help our industries that are related to travelers. But so that piece has kind of been moved off the work for presently. And if I may ask one more question
related. Representative Galvin.
Thank you. I know that we've heard that the dollars likely to have been used in this sort of work for the state of Oregon, and I would say I can think of other states, Nebraska, others who have been very intentional around growing innovatively growing more work in their states by way of some investment, they have seen huge returns as well. So my question is to the maker of this bill. Is this your intention, is your intention to grow government, or is your intention to grow our economy in a way that will allow us as a, I know you mentioned the number of workers who have left Alaska, but I presume that it's to do that, to grow that workforce. But I wanted to ask, which of course relates to DCCED's absolute goal. But I also want you to comment around AWIB, another organization that has met, again, loosely for the committee, this is a group that gathers educators and those from private industry and those who are involved in government to make sure there's a coordinated efforts, especially in industry. So is this trying to help us grow beyond the simple industries we have now to be mindful of what else might be out there and possible?
Representative Poland.
Great.
Long question, sorry. Yeah,
through the chair, thank you for the question, Representative Galvin. This effort is absolutely about growing our economy, growing our private industry, growing jobs, growing communities. The fact that we're, you know, asking I guess directing through policy that the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development is a facilitation role, a backbone role to help accomplish that, is incidental to the benefits that should come to our economy. The efforts that we've seen in other states that you've mentioned and that I've worked with, this becomes largely industry-driven over time and the economic driver, but somehow you've got to get the wheels turning. And in this case, we're using this effort to get the convening and get the process started. But my whole intent and the intent with all the families that I've talked with are about how do we create an economy that our kids are going to stay in Alaska, that our families are going to find opportunity in Alaska. That's what needs to happen.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you. Brief follow-up then. This is for the department. I know that many of the works that you do end up paying for themselves. So I very much am sensitive to the concerns around adding more UGF dollars or dollars in general to in any which way. So in your opinion, do you think that over time there might be a way for this to be self-sufficient? In other words, could it be that you'll see more licensing for different positions, or could it be that you will see or could imagine corporate taxes or somehow being a wash at the end of the day, in other words, over time?
Director Lager.
Yes, through the chair, Representative Galvin, thank you for that. I
would find it hard to speculate on future activity, but what I can say is that our business license and corporations receipts that we collect as general fund program receipts contributed, I believe, in 2025, just over $11 million above what they cost to operate to the general fund. So if there were additional corporations or business registrations, that's where it would go. Thank you.
Okay. I've got in line here Representative Moore, Jimmy Stepp, and then Allard. So Representative Moore.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Thanks for being here, you guys. This is such a great concept, and I'm looking forward to learning more about it. Just a couple of things. On your key details, all volunteer meeting three times a year, virtually or on the telephone. What is it? Maybe you can walk us through the personal services, and the commodities to equal this $341,000 that it's going to cost a year. And, you know, what those, maybe just pinpoint those out. What are we paying for in each of those services? What does that look like?
Absolutely. Ms. Slogger?
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Moore, the personal services includes one program manager. That's a range 21 step C in Juneau. That is the fully loaded cost, so that includes benefits. The salary is lower than that. The services line includes $150,000 in contractual support for research, data collection, and analytics, as well as the report writing. Previously, with similar councils or commissions, we've worked with the university system where we can to leverage those research activities and reimburse them for those. So that's one possible way we could accomplish that. It also includes $25,000 for statewide and department core services. That's kind of the cost of keeping the lights on, the cost of the accounting system, that kind of stuff that goes along with each position. And then there's $10,000 for new employee startup costs in the first year. So that's buying the computer, buying the chair, making sure they have a desk, that kind of operations.
And that's for the program manager. I'm sorry, follow-up.
Representative Moore.
And that's all for the program manager, just the one position.
Through the chair, yes, that's correct.
To have a place in the department. Okay, thank you so much.
Okay. I've got Representative Jimmy Stepp. I'm going to go to actually Tom Shesky, and then we'll come over to Allard. Representative Jimmy.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I, too, have some questions, too, about what Alaskans are expecting with this 340 investment if it should pass. What are your specific outputs? Will this council produce? How will the success be defined in numbers, not intentions? And what would we point to in 3 years and look back and say, was it worth it?
Representative Holland.
Great, thank you. Through the chair to Representative Jimmy. It's a complex question. I think the duties are enumerated and powers on page 3. Beyond what is here directly, you know, what I would offer is that we will measure this in a few years in terms of the number of new businesses and the diversification of our economy and the jobs that we've created. The effort to grow new businesses across the state and the jobs that come with it, I view as absolutely essential. And I really value the discussion we're having today here because we can talk about a lot of things in this legislature, but we very rarely get to talk about what are we doing to actually build the future of our economy. If there is no economic future, there is no future Alaska. We must be growing our economy in the future. And so this bill, these duties are about identifying strategic opportunities such as emerging energy, critical minerals, hydrogen, and other new emerging opportunities and turning those into jobs. It's also about looking differently about the challenges that we face when we're facing issues, you know, like severe climate events and disasters. It's about how do we create the businesses and the opportunities so that we are building the infrastructure and hardening our communities so that we can resist the impacts of climate change and creating jobs from that effort, not just responding to it and fixing it after it's broken. So I wish I had a more succinct answer. The fundamental way I'll look at this down the road is, did we create jobs that kept young Alaskans excited about living in Alaska and staying in Alaska? And did we reverse the annual, every single year, net migration of people that are leaving our state? We're running an escalator here right now. We do our best to attract people up here, and then we watch them leave again. Our own family members, our own kids leave. I'm trying to slow that escalator down. I think this bill is a way for us to examine carefully the opportunities and try and create a place where our next generation and generations to come are going to be excited about staying here.
Question?
Question? Representative Jimmy?
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Thank you for that answer, Representative Holland. My last question is there a target return for grants captured, investments attracted, jobs created? But why is there no leverage requirements in the statute?
Representative Holland?
Yeah, thank you. Through the chair, in this statute there isn't. What I would offer as a way to consider what that looks like is if you look at another piece of work that I've been doing, House Joint Resolution 27, and those numbers I think are a great way to see what this looks like. That identifies a 10-year plan to create 1,200 new energy technology startups that generates a $5 billion GDP impact to our state, creates a $400 million UGF impact to our public funds, and creates at least 30,000 direct and indirect new jobs. So those kinds of metrics are exactly what I see this effort doing, is creating the conversations and the discussion that leads us towards actually achieving that goal.
Follow up. How do we know that this will have paid off in 3 years? So after we spend about $1 million, how do we know we have proof of that?
Representative Holland?
Well, through the next 3 years, we will have spent about $18 billion in other funds. I hope that this small amount, call it $1 million spent over those same 3 years, will have somehow changed the trajectory of how we've spent those billions of dollars, and that more of those billions will have turned into jobs for Alaskans. 3 years from now, if we can measure this in terms of having reversed the net out migration, that we have thriving new jobs, I will consider it a huge success.
Thank you.
Okay. Next up, Representative Stout.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Foster. Through the chair, I have questions for the department and, of course, the sponsor, if that's all right, Mr. Chair. Okay, so I read here, services aligned to the department. You're going to contract out research, data collection, analytics, and report writing each year. So that kind of begs the question, what the heck does the actual full-time employee do other than coordinate three meetings, through the chair?
Absolutely.
Director Lager.
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, I think part of this relates to that the council is only planned to meet three times a year. That's a lot of time when they are not meeting. I think the position would support the board activities, of course, as they are meeting. Also take the assignments from the board and actually enact them in the time frame, right? So what information would they like research and analytics on for the next board meeting to inform the conversation? It'd be liaising with other state agencies, as outlined in the bill, and also maintaining records, and then also working to onboard new board members. I think anytime we have a board, it's sometimes underestimated how much support and getting to know the state that those new board members need, and this would be a fairly large board coming into the department. And so certainly in the first year, but also as those terms go through, there's a level of onboarding support that would happen for the board as well.
Follow up, Mr. Co-Chair.
Representative Stout.
Yeah, I'm not going to let you off on that. What is the purpose of the D.C. commissioner designee to the council, if not to onboard the other members, through the chair?
Director Lager.
Yes, through the chair, Representative Stout. Our commissioner serves on over 24 boards currently, so that probably would be a designee. It may be her, but I mean, there is a very high volume of board work in the department. That position is on there as a member of the board, not as staff support for the board.
So, follow up, Mr. Co-Chair. Just to ask the question more specifically, if I have a commissioner designee on the council, that would imply that that person has some understanding of the Department of Commerce, since they're a designee of the commissioner. Why do I need a full-time employee to orientate the board to the department if I have a designee from the department on the council, through the chair?
Director Lager.
Through the chair, Representative Stapp. As I mentioned, I think that is a piece of the work. I think a larger piece of the work is advancing the work of the council in between the board meetings.
Follow up. Last point on this, what does that mean through the chair, advancing the work of the council? So they have a meeting, they go to the Innovation Council, they have some projects, and now they contract out all the kind of analytical work that is to go design to facilitate those projects. And now the Range 21 employee, what exactly are they facilitating through the chair?
Director Lager.
Through the chair, Representative Stapp. Yes, there is some contracting work. I think there's a lot of, I anticipate facilitation with other agencies, as mentioned in the bill. There's also the development of the Innovation Index that I think will be a fair body of work for the council, at least in the first year, and probably refinements in future years from there.
Follow-up, Mr. Co-Chair.
Follow-up.
Is this person going to do any other work outside of the description in this fiscal note through the chair?
Director Lager.
Through the chair, Representative Stapp. At this point, the position is fully devoted to the council.
Okay. I'm going to shift gears now to the sponsor, if that's okay.
Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair. Through chair to Representative Hall. Hey, thanks for being here, and by the way, and thanks for bringing this bill forward. So I guess on the makeup of the council, and I'm pretty sure you covered this last time. It's just been a bit while since I heard the bill. The thoughts behind... So just to summarize this, like my experience with boards and councils is the more different kind of people on there, the harder it is to get something done. So I understand the nature of innovation. Is there a specific logic behind having, let's say, like the UA biz enterprise person and a UA president nominee through the chair? It seems a little redundant. So
Representative Holland.
Right. Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Stapp, in that particular example you're citing, you're really looking at two very different aspects of what the university does. The Business Enterprise Institute is an organization that houses the small business development centers, the Center for Economic Development, and the Procurement and Technical Assistance Program, now known as the APEX Accelerator Program. These are all business assistance programs. They're not doing any research. They're not doing any teaching or education. The other position that brings in the UA president is bringing in the research and the teaching academic side of the institution. And it is those two sides of the university that are very different, very unique, that are both necessary to this discussion. But they are very different domains of work and contribution.
Okay. Follow up, Mr. Coacher.
Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you to Representative Holland. Thanks for the explanation. The other question I have is some of these positions, in theory, they could kind of double up. So, for example, rural startup, tribal government, regional development organization. Like, I can actually think of an organization that probably could meet all three of those things if you're like an employee of Bristol Barrier Health Corporation or something like that. So how do you necessarily I assume you the objective here is to have different entities represented, correct? And how do you prevent that in the bill through the chair?
Senator Pauland?
Yeah, through the chair, you know, we provided some guidance in, I think it's the first section that kind of delineates those positions and the appointing authority. There will potentially be overlap in that, and that's, you know, the nature of working in Alaska at this point. So we didn't try to create 12 unique slices of individual, but, you know, I think each of these represents different domains of perspective experience that can contribute to it, but it would not surprise me to see overlap.
Okay, and last fall, Mr. Co-Chair.
Representative Stapp.
Through the chair to Representative Holland. I see you have organized labor on there, but is there any thought of adding, I guess, unorganized labor to your Innovation Council? They tend to make up a larger swath of overall people. And maybe you had that on there before because I saw it got reduced from 19 to 12, but just thoughts on that through the chair.
Representative Holland.
Right, thank you, through the chair. Other organizations that are on there, ANCs, regional corporations, angel investors, startup founders, startups, those all, I think, all capture different slices of labor interests and perspectives beyond the organized. But we did want to specifically carve out a perspective organized labor because if we had not put that on there, it's very likely that perspective might have been overlooked. So I think this is an important contribution.
Thank you.
Okay, I've got Representative Tomaszewski, Allard, Hannon, and Bynum. Representative Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, through the chair. So I'm looking on page 3, duties and powers, line 25. Except as otherwise provided by law, the council may request a state government agency to furnish information and provide advice to the council to the extent necessary to perform the council's duties. Which departments, what does that look like? Which departments do you feel like you will be contacting and asking to furnish information? Kind of what does that look like?
Representative Holland.
Great. Thank you. Through the chair. You know, it's a broad identification that a lot of the innovation could come, for example, through the Department of Health. And we might want to be asking Department of Health for information about what's happening with the rural healthcare transformation programs and how is that money being allocated and what does that teach us about new business opportunities. We might want to go over to the ADA organization and we might be asking them about where are they making investments and see private opportunity and private need going on. We might be over in another area looking for how is disaster relief money being spent and what is that teaching us about innovations in new building construction, new seawall construction, and developing activities that would align our state's efforts with creating new jobs and businesses. We might want to be talking about, you know, with the Gasoline Development Corporation about what are the business opportunities that are created because we're building a pipeline. Those are a few examples.
Follow-up.
Representative Tomaszewski.
So do we think that there would be a fiscal note attached to the research that those departments are going to be needing to provide the council? And is that represented in our fiscal notes here?
Representative Poland?
Yeah, through the chair, I don't believe it should generate a fiscal note. I think, you know, my experience right now is those departments have been very willing to help provide information and share what they're doing. I could imagine that if something turned into a large project request, that might be different. But in terms of just day-to-day coordination and identification work that they're doing, I'm not anticipating a fiscal note.
Okay, and one more follow-up here.
Representative Tomaszewski.
So on the very next line, it says the council may establish committees and delegate the duties and powers of the council to the committees. Are there specific committees you think that the council would be creating? And is that going to kind of balloon into more? Because if we're making more committees to work on these individual issues, then I'm thinking if they have the same powers and duties, then they're going to be able to contact the departments and also request information. So I'm looking at a snowball effect, and I just kind of want to get your idea on how you think that'll look.
Representative Poland.
Great. Thank you. Through the chair. The committees that I could imagine, but, you know, I don't want to put myself in the place of this council and what it might do, might, for example, find it necessary to put some focus into disaster-related opportunities. They might want to focus in on energy-related activities, or they might want to focus in on the rural healthcare transformation. So there's some different domain areas that might warrant some specialized, focused work by a few people that want to work through a committee type of process. I know also, looking at the Oregon model, that they found it really beneficial to have a group focusing specifically on private capital and how to link and leverage the different capital programs that the state had available and work with private lenders as well as angel investors. That was a focused activity of a subcommittee effort, as a couple of examples.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Representative Allard.
Thank you, and if you don't mind, I just wanted to read a couple of lines because I can't memorize it. Okay. So the mission of the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development is to promote healthy economy, strong communities, protect consumers in Alaska. The department works to achieve this by helping communities build sustainable economies, self-governance, while fostering a regulatory environment where businesses can thrive. I feel like this is the same thing. Then there's also, I didn't know if Representative Holland, if you had been able to discuss this particular bill with the Alaska Workforce Investment Board. Seems like they do the same thing. Anchorage Economic Development Corporation, they do it. Alaska Development Corporation and Regional Development Organization from Fairbanks and the Southeast. It just seems like we're growing government, and why couldn't you possibly work with these boards and commissions as we're trying to, and councils, because we're trying to shrink how many we actually have because it costs money. So I was just wondering, had you reached out to them to maybe grab one person from each but not have a fiscal note? Struggling with your fiscal note.
Representative Pauling.
Great. Through the chair, I can just, I can hear my staff screaming at me, Kai, be brief. because this is such an interesting question that you've asked. I've spent the last 10 years working in this space. The simple answer is yes. The Alaska Workforce Investment Board, the AWIB, has a unique focus, primarily administrating Carl Perkins money that's used for career and technical education. It's a piece of the puzzle, but it's not doing economic development to startup businesses. The Anchorage Economic Development Council Corporation has developed their Choose Anchorage plan that identifies this, but they have no money to actually work on doing any of this, so they're not meeting doing any of this. The ARTRs that we have in this state, they're tasked with this, but really have no time or energy to actually work on bringing the folks together at this point. There's lots of folks that have this as an intent or a mission or a purpose. There's nobody that's actually getting together and bringing the folks into the same figurative or virtual room to do this work at this point. So, yes, we met with all of them. We need to do this work. If one of these organizations that already has funding and already has capability would do this, I'd stand behind it 100%. We're not here today because these groups could do it, should do it, or are doing it. It's because this work needs to get done.
Okay, just a comment.
Representative Ballard?
I think we should make them could do it, should do it, and will do it. So, but thank you. Thanks, Representative Holland.
Okay, next up I've got Representative Hannon, Bynum, Jimmy, and Moore. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Foster. I'm actually going to turn to the department for a little bit of history. And I know that when I was first elected and served on DCCE subcommittee, Ms. Lager was already there, and the department had already been compressed from the Department of Commerce and Economic Development, and the Department of Community and Regional Affairs had already been morphed. I don't know if you were there then, but I know in that development of the FY20 budget, the first year that I was serving the legislature, there was a number of positions and several dollars, and I don't know off the top of your head if you recall how much that was that we stripped out, we the legislature stripped out of Commerce and Economic Development and said we're not going to do it at the department level anymore, and my recollection is the money was all transferred to the governor's budget, and then in FY21 it went from economic development positions and dollars to statehood defense monies. But could you tell me, because you were the ASD at DCCED when I came in FY20, if you recollect how many positions and how much money we had specified for economic development in that department?
Director Lager.
Thank you. Through the Chair, Representative Hannon, I can speak generally about this. I was with the department at that point. I was in a slightly different role at that time, but we did have a much larger economic development component, and you know, over $2 million is my recollection. At one point, we had as many as 13 positions, I mean, in recent history, but I would say starting with the fiscal crisis in fiscal year 2016, we saw gradual reductions and gradual reductions each year until, as you remembered, it was zeroed out in the budget and the positions were removed.
Representative Bannon.
Thank you, Chair Foster. I guess one of the things the interest in history is economic development doesn't happen unless you specify a goal. I don't think the department's been given go back and readdress your mission statement, even though we stripped out economic development as your goal. They are the seat of where all of our professional licensure and sort of it's just left to imply. That's our economic. You do all of our professional licensing boards. But if we want economic development, we need to specify people, dollars, and time to make it happen. And I think, you know, this is a bill that says a specific kind of economic development is what he's asking for, new and innovative. And the economic environment may not be ripe, but I don't think it's radical or revolutionary to say if we want this to happen, if we want to prepare for 21st century development, then we need to put some money and time towards it, not just band-aid it and not just expect it to happen on its own, because it doesn't. But thank you. I figured you'd know that off the top of your head because your department in particular has had a lot of shrink reach over the last decade.
I've got Representative Bynum, Jimmy Moore, and Tom Shefsky. Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. representative from Eagle River had brought up kind of an important point. And when I go down the list, I can look at state public corporations and authorities, everything from ADA, the Alaska Energy Authority, Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, Alaska Rubber Corporation, then moving on to university-based research. We have the Alaska Center for Energy and Power, Alaska University of Alaska Fairbanks Office of Intellectual Property and Commercialization, the University of Alaska Center for Innovation, Commercialization, and Entrepreneurship, University of Alaska Anchorage Business Entrepreneurship Institute. With private non-sector areas, we have Launch Alaska, the Resource Development Council, Alaska Small Business and Development Corporation, Alaska Chamber, the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation. We can then talk about federal programs that are aligned with U.S. Small Business Administration for Alaska Denali Commission, down to regional organizations like Southeast Conference, the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, Cold Climate Housing Research, AOGA, that's Industry Resources, Council on Alaska Producers, and the list goes on and on and on. And we could probably prioritize where they're all playing an important role in trying to advocate for innovation in the state. So I'm just trying to get a better understanding of how we think that this council, although I love the ambition of the idea, I do, I really do, how they're going to really coordinate all of these different areas to actually produce a product that's going to get us moving in the right direction. Wouldn't it be better to tell one of our departments, give them the resources necessary to say, go coordinate with these people and actually produce a product that has an end game?
Representative Holland.
Great. Thank you. Through the chair to Representative Bynum. Thank you. You have stated exactly what this bill does. This bill creates a structure to tell a department to bring together these groups to coordinate and link and leverage their efforts. So what you've just asked to be done is what this policy bill is intending to accomplish, and you've laid it out better than I did. Thank you for that long list of organizations that are doing all good work independently, but nothing is bringing them together.
Perfect. And then one quick follow-up, just kind of a comment.
Representative
Co-Chair Foster. You know, when I look at this, I immediately say, how do we have economic benefit into our communities? And I think of things like, well, Southeast Alaska, for example. Having coordination with the Mental Health Land Trust and DNR to make sure that we're opening up land so that we can actually have some affordable housing, working with Alaska Housing to make that happen, making investment in the Renewable Energy Fund, which brings lower cost electricity to our Southeast communities and communities across Alaska. That creates innovation and growth in industry. Investing in things like we've talked quite a bit about in Southeast, the shipyards, right? We can make an investment in shipyards in Ketchikan and Wrangell, and I could bring hundreds of millions of dollars of economic growth to the region year after year after year for those initial investments. But until we can get a handle on our desire as a finance committee and a legislature to make capital investment in this state, I see that we are going to have a very big challenge ahead of us for making sure that private capital can come into this state, because they're going to have a hard time getting employees if you can't house them. They're going to have a hard time getting employees if you can't transport them from one place to the next. And they're going to have a hard time making sure that they're going to have a healthy business if we don't have affordable power. So I think we have some real big challenges. I applaud your effort here and appreciate you bringing this to us.
Okay. Representative Holland.
Through the chair, thank you for your comments. I appreciate your vision and the energy of which you're bringing to this very topic. It is about creating our future and linking and leveraging these assets that we have, like the shipyard and the jobs that could come out of that and the multiplier that comes out of each of those efforts where those ships and that work turns into other activities in our economy. And I'm looking at how are we creating this stable economy for the future.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Jimmy.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. This question is to the maker of the bill. Were you able to do some research that had measurable incomes from when the DCCED had programmed this?
Representative Holland?
Through the chair, I don't have any quantitative data from back 10 years ago. I worked with DCCED back when they had those folks, and we had a very robust startup community and startups, but I can't quantify it. I don't know if Director Lager can recall any quantification that we had of what was going on when we had those positions or not.
Director Lager?
Yes, through the chair, Representative Jimmy, I don't have any of that information with me today. I know that we did publish performance measures for that unit when we had it that measured the impact on the economy at that point.
Follow up. Thank you. So would you say the legislator got rid of this program because it wasn't working or because there's not enough funds?
Representative Holland?
Through the chair, my recollection was that there were two factors going on at that point in time. One was that we were in a severe fiscal crisis, and we are today, I acknowledge that. And you know, there was an effort to look at any expense that you know was discretionary could put off. And the fact of the matter is economic development is something that, you know, if you have an engine of activity going on there, it's easy to kind of let off the gas and let it coast for a while. And we did. And we've let it coast to the point where, you know, that engine has now stopped, and this is an effort to try and restart it. But we were able to continue for a number of years coasting on that momentum. And then the other activity that was going on was there was a shift that I believe was mentioned earlier about some of those resources were moved into a different area to provide a different type of economic development that was done by a different area of the state government. So it was a combination of those two that allowed that money to go away.
Last follow.
Representative Jimmy.
So you agree we are in a fiscal crisis. Would you agree?
Representative Holland?
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Jimmy. I have a cartoon out there that I won't belabor, but you know, for those that are looking for a fiscal cliff coming up, I think it's behind us. We are already off the cliff. We are already falling. And the question now is, what's it going to look like as we try and figure out where we're going to land? And to me, this effort is one piece of starting to define how we are going to shape and grow a future economy so that we have some place to land. If we just simply ignore building a future economy, then the landing that we're going to see will be even harder than what is going to happen. So I am absolutely on board that we are in a severe fiscal crisis, and I am painfully aware that any dollar we move from one place to another is going to hurt. It's a zero-sum game right now, but if we are not doing something to build that future, then I'm not sure what the game will result in.
Okay.
Next question, Representative Moore.
Thank you, Chair Foster. This is probably for Representative Holland, a question for you. Again, love this idea. So just trying to find, you know, with the fiscal note attached to it, trying to find some explore ideas here. Have you guys looked into eliminating the personal services and services and giving those duties to the council to do, you know, for maybe a year and have some proof of concept? Before we issue state funds, is there any kind of possibility around that, or you know, maybe I'm sure the startup things like the computer furniture and those. I mean, I guess that's something that maybe we could get behind. But the proof of concept before we just start throwing that much state funds at this, is that an idea or something that you guys have explored?
Representative Holland?
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Moore. Yes, we have explored this. We've been doing it. I facilitated a number of startup ecosystem-related gatherings. I was the commercialization officer for the UAF for a while. I've helped organize a significant amount of the startup ecosystem work. We have worked, for over a decade now of trying to marshal together these resources. And at the end of the day, I've come to the conclusion that we need to have some backbone support for this to work, to bring the people together, to create continuity, to have a professional structure to accomplishing this work. We've done a lot. We've kept this ecosystem alive, quite frankly, but it has been through a very ragtag effort of volunteer efforts, and depending upon who was coming and going, we've been able to move some of these initiatives along. So the engine's not dead in terms of the startup ecosystem. You know, we just had our Alaska Angel Conference a month and a half ago. We awarded a $100,000 investment to one of our startups. We have a G-Beta Startup Accelerator program that just launched last week at this point. We're barely holding it together, but if we're going to do more, we need to have a professional structure to doing this. Does it have to be DCCED? It, looked like it was a strong place to go because they had a track record in the past of doing this. And quite frankly, this effort of helping marshal and connect up with the rest of the resources that are available to that department, that made it to be a great hub of where this should be coordinated from. But, yeah, we've tried. We've been doing it.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Okay. I've got Representative Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Thank you, Representative Holland, for bringing this. I am, as a small business owner and startup guy for the last 25 years, I've kind of lived this. I never really had government help me. So I kind of take offense when some members say, well, none of this is going to happen if the state doesn't do it, because I would believe that most startups are done by on the private sector on their own accord. You mentioned my question is, you mentioned the Oregon model, and there's been questions on, how do we index this? How do we, what do we do? I see that the innovation is going to, or developing an innovation index that benchmarks the state, rural and areas of the state, and urban areas of the state against the national innovation metrics. You mentioned the Oregon model. Do you have any examples from their model? Like, what did they really? Do you have anything that what they helped create or inspire?
Representative Holland.
Yeah, thank you. Through the chair. Represent Tomaszewski. The work that Oregon Innovation Council has done has changed quite a bit over the years. They started off looking primarily at the deployment of private capital and the leveraging of seed investments, early stage investments, and then leading on to banks and further investments. So an early metric and indication is the deployment of private capital and its availability. Beyond that, the tracking has looked at the number of new businesses formation and the jobs being created have been a key metric. And then they've looked at follow-on capitalization as businesses develop and it attracts new investment to that. They've tracked that. So those would be the early metrics that I would imagine we would be looking at here. In terms of what we would see in Alaska as real traction. Are we creating real jobs? Are we attracting private capital? And is that capital being deployed to be able to create new businesses?
A follow-up.
Follow-up.
I just comment. This has been a great conversation, a great idea, and I really appreciate the amount of thought that you've put into this. Thank you.
Okay. Do we have any other questions of the committee? Okay, seeing none, I was going to set an amendment deadline for next Monday, so that's a week from now, March the 2nd at 5 p.m. Folks could please provide those amendments to my staff, Mr. Brody Anderson or Ms. Helen Phillips. So with that, Representative Holland, any final comments before we move on to the next bill?
I'm hearing the voice telling me to be brief and quiet, but just a brief comment. First off, thank you to everyone for this long discussion. We were prepared for about a 7-minute reintroduction and get out of the way and let you move on with that. So I truly am honored and appreciate the deep discussion that we've had. This is important work. The work of thinking about what are we doing to grow our future economy. If we're not doing that work, the rest of it is not going to work out very well for us. The role of government in helping stimulate our economy is a necessary part of it. Two-thirds of our national GDP over the last 50 years is a result of the role of public sector investments and guidance, and that has created an amazing economy in our country. Two-thirds of our GDP for this country comes from this innovation work. It's a proven strategy. It's necessary, and I appreciate your time today talking about it.
Great. Thank you very much, Representative Holland, and thank you to everybody at the table. So with that, we're going to move on to the next bill. This should be fairly quick here. It's House Bill 280, and that is the highly digitized tax bill. If I could have my staff, Mr. Brody Anderson, please come to the table. The only two things we wanted to do is just do a brief recap of the bill and then walk through the fiscal notes. I believe, Mr. Anderson, you've been working on getting some answers to some of the questions that had come up at our initial meeting and still kind of working through that. So I think we're going to come back to our next meeting and try to address some of those. So for this meeting, just the brief recap and then the fiscal note, and we'll be done for the day. So with that, Mr. Anderson.
Great. Great. Thank you. Excuse me. For the record, my name is Brody Anderson, staff to Representative Neil Foster. As a brief recap of what House Bill 280 does, there are two changes to statute that this bill proposes. One, it amends the multi-state tax compact to adopt market-based sourcing. And then the second thing is twofold. It creates a definition of what is highly digitized businesses, and then changes that portion of corporate tax to a single factor from the three-factor apportionment. As a reminder to the committee, there is the retroactive clause that exists at the end. And then most importantly, I wanted to point out before we work with Department of Revenue, the committees have, as a last-minute add, we heard from the Motion Picture Association last week through invited testimony. That language was provided to the members to read through while questioning them. There are two other industries that are asking for consideration for amendments during the process. These are not, though distributed by the Foster office, this is just as to have the discussion amongst your members. It was distributed by our office, represented language suggested by the Alaska Bankers Association. And the other one is for the telecommunications industry. This language was reflective or discussed in the previous bill that was moved and passed last year and then vetoed. So Department of Revenue, I resent them to Department of Revenue to ask and to be prepared to answer questions regarding those portions in conversations of how this committee might want to move forward with those possible changes to the bill, and then also to have the department be able to express the full comprehensive look at what this bill might do to the Tax and Treasury Division. Mr. Chairman, that summarizes a recap of the bill.
Okay, thank you. So with regard to the two proposed language changes, sounds like you said that we're waiting for Department of Revenue to get back to us with their thoughts. So I think we'll take that discussion up at the next meeting. But if you could walk us through the fiscal notes.
Absolutely. Turning to the fiscal note in front of the members, it is fiscal note control code JWVKW. It is OMB component number 2476, dated February 6, 2026. Before the committee today, you have the total operating cost of this fiscal note is $321,700. That is from personal services at $280,900, travel at $5,000, services is $27,800, and commodities is $8,000. You will see throughout the outgoing years there is a slight reduction from 321.7 thousand down to 313.7 thousand. This fiscal note reflects two new positions that are full-time. They do not reflect any change in revenue on that first page, but in their workup, they do say that there is a possibility of a revenue change from $25 to $65 million for annual revenue change. They take the middle point in their estimation, saying that this could possibly generate around $30 million per year. The implementation cost does include some trims updating as well as some other filing stuff. Excuse me. But, Mr. Chairman, that roughly summarizes the fiscal note in front of you that Department of Revenue will be able to discuss further.
Great. Thank you very much. We do have the preparer of the fiscal note online. That's Mr. Brandon Spanos, as well as Michael Williams, corporate tax manager. And they're both in Anchorage, so they're on the line if we do have any questions. With that, Representative Stapp, question?
Yeah, thank Co-Chair Foster. To the chair, to Mr. Anderson or Mr. Spanos online, reading the implementation cost fiscal note talks about how you basically are going to require, in order to notify taxpayers in the tax year 26, now that we're in going to when they file in 27, that you need to hire a tax auditor 4 and a tax auditor 2. And it says the additional workload requires the department to hire one of those to inform the taxpayer of these new requirements. What is the timeline for that? How many vacancies do you have in that department? And what happens if you can't hire those people in a reasonable time before the taxes are due? Through the chair, in the three-part question.
Sure. And we'll go to Mr. Spanos. Mr. Spanos, if you could put yourself on the record.
Yes, for the record, Brandon Spanos, Acting Director for the Tax Division, and through the Chair, Representative Stapp. Yes, we did ask for two new positions to do the work. The outreach we could do with whether or not we hired those positions right away. The positions would be created when the bill is enacted. They'd be in the fiscal year 2027. And so we would be able to hire them as soon as they were created in the budget in FY27. So the outreach would be done right away with existing staff. Another part of your question was how many vacancies. We have 0 vacancies in our corporate income tax group today. And there was 3 parts. I'm not sure I answered the third part, but I can't remember what it is. If you could ask that one again.
Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Foster, the chair. In general, how many tax auditor positions do you have vacant? And I think you might have answered that, but you did specifically answer that to the corporate world. So I'm just curious if there's any other vacancies in tax auditors through the chair.
Mr. Spanos?
Yes, through the chair, Representative Stapp. So our tax division, as was discussed in the last bill, we're not the only division. However, our division has shrunk 30%. Over the last decade. So we do have far fewer auditor positions and other positions, support positions than we've had in the past. But currently, I believe we have 1 vacancy in our oil and gas group of an auditor position, and we have 2 vacancies in our excise group.
That's all, Mr. Kutcher.
Follow up.
Yeah, thank Co-Chair Foster, the chair. I still want to make this pertain to the bill, but you just said something that puzzled my brain. You said you had a big downsize in auditor positions. Is there a specific reason for that through the chair?
Mr. Spanos?
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, yes. The legislature continues to defund our positions, and so we lose them year after year.
Representative Stapp, any follow-up now?
No, I don't remember doing that, Co-Chair, but I mean, I could be wrong. I mean, I've been here 4 years, so maybe it was... I don't remember cutting tax auditor positions, but that's... I don't know if anyone else has any insight, so...
Mr. Spanos, maybe you could get back to us with some detail at some point. Maybe, yeah. I think we've got another question, Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster.
I was just thinking to myself as a little joke, maybe we can just blame the co-chairs. That would be fun to do. But we'll blame the other body. There we go. There we go. No, seriously, my question is revolving around the fiscal note. And in the fiscal note, it really talks about in the implementation cost, it's talking about due dates in 2027. How would your fiscal note be impacted or change if the effective date for this bill were to be January 1st, 2027?
Mr. Spanos?
Through the chair, Representative, this bill, it has a retroactive date. However, corporate income tax uses a tax year that's, for most taxpayers, is the calendar year. So the due date for the tax return is 30 days after the federal return, so that would be May 15th most years. And so we do feel like we have enough time to stand up the main changes to the bill. We haven't put any costs in the bill for making system changes, which is normally why it would cost more to have a retroactive date. But because the changes don't directly affect major components, we don't have to stand up a new tax type. We don't have to make major changes to our system. We have to make some minor changes. The biggest piece is the highly digitized component goes to a single sales factor. But because we already have the factors built in the system, we don't see that as a major lift. So because we have zero costs in the fiscal note for the system implementation changes, the date for the effective date on the bill would have no impact on the fiscal note. The only costs that we have in this fiscal note are for hiring two additional positions, and the main purpose of those two additional positions are to audit these companies that would be paying tax to Alaska after the bill is passed that are not paying tax today.
Follow-up?
Representative Bynum.
So just for clarity, I just want to make sure. So my question was, is if the effective date was moved to January 1, 2027, instead of retroactively being January 1, 2026, are you telling me there's no fiscal impact by moving the effective date? Just want to be clear. That's what it sounded like to me, but I just want to make sure that that's what I heard.
Mr. Spanos.
Through the chair, Representative Bynum, that's correct.
Thank you.
Okay, any further questions on the fiscal note?
Yes.
Representative Josephson?
Through the chair, Mr. Spanos, on the question or the exchange you had with Representative Stapp, this issue of tax auditors is a sensitive one for us. As you know, we overrode a governor's veto on oil relating to oil and gas auditors and their work. Could you, there was some informality in the dialogue here at the dais about providing us with any information about how the legislature has cut tax auditors. I'd like to make that a more formal request. If, in fact, the legislature in the last decade has cut tax auditor positions, would you enlighten us about that via email through the chairs, please?
Mr. Spanos?
Through the chair, Representative, or Co-Chair Josephson, absolutely. The most recent cuts were just done last year. Senate Finance Subcommittee on revenue cut four positions, and then they funded, or there was a specific dollar amount on that. So just last year, we did lose four positions. Two of those, we did have some discretion on which positions to cut. We had vacant audit master positions. Those were the lowest hanging fruit, and they have higher paid positions. But we really had no other frontline positions to cut. So those were lost. We also lost an oil property tax tax technician that deals directly with taxpayers. And I forget what the fourth position was, but yeah, we can put that in writing. And that was, so when I said it was the legislature that was defunding the positions, that is, that's been under the Dunleavy administration. We've lost positions through budget cuts that were done by the legislature. Under the Walker administration, we were directed by the governor to cut positions. So it's been a combination of both cuts at the through the governor's budget as well as through legislative defunding over the decade.
Representative Josephson.
All right. I appreciate that. It sounds like you're well along the way to be able to write us an email about that, and I look forward to reading it. Thank you, Acting Director.
Okay. Well, I don't see any further questions. We're going to go ahead and set this bill aside. That's House Bill 280. That's the highly digitized tax bill. And so with that, our next scheduled meeting is for tomorrow. That's Tuesday, February 24th at 1:30 p.m. And at that meeting, we'll hear a presentation on the Alaska Permanent Fund performance by Callen and Associates. So with that, if there's nothing else to come for the committee, we'll be adjourned at 3:14 p.m. Thank you.